Thank you all so much for doing this talk back as well.
What a pleasure.
So we...
I'll do anything.
Yeah.
You'll do anything?
I'll do anything.
So we just did that space-themed...
We never named it anything.
We didn't. Should we name it right now?
Yeah, we should name it something. What do you think? You got anything in there, Richie?
I was thinking, I mean, the theme of it being like...
Conspiracies, mysteries. Mystery.
We're three improvisers who just improvised the entire show.
The wheels of...
The spokes of
mystery.
Uh-huh. The space between...
The space between us.
Yeah.
The space between us.
Great. Let's do it.
That's good.
Let's
done.
Do mm-hmm. And let's do it again.
So we just finished improvising our musical, which we've just titled The Space Between
yes.
Us. So I wanted to take this chance to get a little bit nerdy with both of you about musical improv, which hopefully can be helpful to other people interested in this form and who might just want to get more into the theory side of it. I think both of you spend time thinking about improv and musical improv, so... Would you each tell me how you got into the musical improv scene and what your relationship is with it now, starting with you, Richie?
Sure. I'm among giants because you two both have done it for a long time. I'm very new to musical improv, at least I guess it's like a year and a half I've done it. But having done improv for many, many years and then having done musicals for many, many years, it's like a nice, it's a really nice like homecoming of being like, okay, well, I do still feel very babyish in it, but I like that. I like that feeling. I like feeling very like fresh and new to it. And it has brought the adrenaline back to improv for me as far as like, I've always loved improv a lot, but like adding the singing aspect into it, I feel like. I'm still like trying to catch up like skill wise, but it's so fun to feel like a newborn baby in an art form.
I'm not going to tell you how to feel, but I don't think you play like a newborn baby.
No, you play very well and with great confidence. So.
Yeah. I think you are such an experienced and talented performer that so much of what I think a lot of people coming to musical improv have to put time into actively learning is stuff that you'd already spent time learning, which helps a lot.
Yes,
I had the advantage of coaching Richie a lot for that first year.
Yeah.
Which was super fun.
So you've seen me at my worst is what you're saying.
No, I mean, I what I saw was that you were always, like, you always had amazingly comfortable stage presence and a very intuitive understanding of just entertainment and comedy and what we were doing, which are two of the hardest things to teach someone if they don't bring it already. What I saw was someone who I thought was going to be very good just getting reps.
It does feel like, I mean, I have no problem committing to characters. It's just whether or not I know what those characters are going to say. Wherein sometimes in musical improv you do want you start a song and you're like, okay, like this song, the trajectory of this song is clear. And sometimes when I do improv, my improv is trajectory less. And I just barrel, which is also it's nice, and it is some type of an advantage where it's like it is a skill set that my improv tends to do. But when you, I don't know, it's nice to, there's a really nice thing about musical improv in the same way of like harmony where it's like, can we get on the same page with an idea?
Yeah.
And can we really sing that? And then with that chorus, like solidify that idea and then both play on a clear idea.
I think every improviser is like a unique blend of the two. A few weeks ago, Ali Gordon came on the pod and was talking about the two muscles that you work in musical improv, and I've been thinking about this a lot in coaching. One is like, if one muscle side is like exploring and like kind of pure creation, exploring and finding new things and finding new things in your environment and uncovering rocks and discovering beautiful things. And then the other half is framing, labeling, winnowing, and more like, it's like going wide and then going deep. And so what I hear when you describe it that way is like that you feel like maybe like your creation muscle is very strong and the muscle you're working on is your framing and justifying and more the going deep muscle than the going wide muscle.
Yes, which I think in normal improv is I'm usually fine with, but as soon when I when the music starts, I get excited. I'm like, and my adrenaline and my excitement starts to get ahead of my brain or that like that being happens. Able to label and stuff.
It happens to all of us.
Yeah.
Philip and I both, but mostly me, had multiple lines in this show that you might have just listened to, where my brain clearly got ahead of me and I was stumbling over not make word sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But one of your superpowers, Sarah, is you can really move through a phrase. I think you're really good at moving through like an idea without letting the music stop you in a way. Like you let the comedy move first. And I think that's really why you have very funny improv, musical
so
improv.
So impressive.
And you're also just really good at like moving through scansion, like the way words line on music in a fun, creative way. But you like, you can get out a complicated idea. You often have complicated or complex ideas.
Yeah.
And you can get them out effectively in a way some players struggle with because you don't let the fear of the music stop you from saying the polysyllabic idea.
Yeah. I do think that's something I'm good at. And I think part of why that's something that I might find easier is, and I don't say this as like a form of self-deprecation, but because I have less actual music experience than a lot of people who like succeed in this space, a lot of people have way more actual music theory performing like practice than I do. And so the music, I think, is just more present to be a distraction. Whereas my relationship to the music part of all this is I'm like trusting a lot in my intuition and in my ear. Mm. I don't know much at all about music theory or composition. I would never have used the word scansion.
I think I overused that word for how uncommon
it
is.
No, but it is true. Like it's a word I know from studying classics in college and looking at Latin poetry, which is very like rhythmic. But I think it's just easier for me because that stuff is all way less conscious in my choices than I think it is. I'm just imagining. I don't know. But like I'd imagine for you, especially when. Set aside moments when you're trying to do that with piano and singing, but when you're not accompanying yourself, I guess it's a question, it's an empirical question. How conscious of musical choices are you?
I think I've been pretty conscious of it on the piano because it can establish what kind of song you're singing in a way. Like,
That makes sense that the pianists do that.
Yeah, like a ballad is funny in a different way than something that jams or something in a dominant key has like a kind of a sexuality to it that a song in a more tonic center would have. I misused tonic there, but whatever. So it's like, but as a singer, I don't think I'm super conscious about the singing, except recently I've been challenging myself to try and improvise more musical songs, like more musically pleasing songs. So I'm trying to actually like elevate. I don't want to I think as you get better at all the things, something I want to get better at is like singing songs that are great songs. And I think so I've been thinking more about being more leapy in my melodies because I tend to think if I'm not thinking about it and I'm just improvising really hard and thinking a lot, it'll tend to be a lot of like the same note or the same three notes in succession. So just like in songwriting, I'm trying to be more sticky with my writing. Same in the improv, trying to be like, what could be like a leap?
Yeah.
What could be a poppy move?
I do think you have to be conscious about it because when you're doing songwriting and stuff, you get to like go over the same thing over and over again and go, oh, I'm going to switch it up this time. But you start, I do start to notice in doing musical improv where I'm like, oh, that's my tendency. I know how I do the, like, I know how I navigate a chorus, and I do have to kind of go like, no, do it differently.
Yes.
This time, like, and take a bigger leap or, you know, take a dive
musically,
in some way
in,
musically, because otherwise, I don't know, I've started to, I mean, I can realize it with other people too, watching shows where I'm like, oh, that's like their signature thing.
That's the
thing.
Note they choose, even in a scale. People totally. Tend to, like, I will always sing, if you're in a key of C, some people will always sing, I don't want to wander around, and some people will always sing the third, mm-hmm. and around the third, and up the third. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I think that, see, this is a great example of what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
I think don't fight, if there's someone watching this looking for advice on how do I find my musical style or how do I do stuff that's more musically interesting, don't fight the natural cadence that your brain wants to produce.
Yes, 100%.
Too many people, like if you're playing those dun, 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 people are going to try to force themselves word-wise onto the rhythm. And I think you're being too conscious of the beat there. And you'll be like, I don't want to get out of my bed beat. And that's unnatural and that's not how you talk. And I think really good music and musical songs evoke more natural human patterns of speech.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, I find that I pause a lot when I'm speaking to let my brain think about what it's trying to say or find the right word. And so a lot of my speech patterns has long pauses. And then I can say a lot of stuff really fast because I've allowed myself time to process it. And instead of fighting that when I'm singing, I think I just use that to force that kind of musicality. So like, I don't know what I'm gonna say to you when you come home. Like, you just, whatever it is. So like, that's easier for my brain.
Yes.
It's just,
to think like a phrase as opposed to a note.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I agree. I think, and stickiness, and I'm using stickiness as like in the pop sense where it's like, oh, that's a really sticky melody.
For sure.
Has a lot to do with like how naturally the phrase makes sense with the melody.
Yeah.
So I think you're totally right. Like, think, just sing it like you talk, like don't overthink in a way.
Yeah, just
sing like how you talk. As an expression of how you talk, and you'll end up with something sticky.
Yes.
Exactly. And I think that's where listening comes in. That gets easier as people get further and further into the art form.
Yeah.
But listening to yourself, like if you can get to a point where you're so comfortable and you can be so present in the moment that your brain will guide you, because very few of us actually speak totally monotonously. So when you're speaking, your brain has in it already.
Yeah.
I'm going up and I'm going down. I'm going up and I'm going down.
Yes.
And like, just let those things guide you. It's not conscious.
Yeah.
But
it's like the more comfortable you get with all the other stuff, the more that will get easier, I think.
Totally. And it does. I always love those, what do you call them, where they take somebody's, like, somebody who speaks very melodically or in a very rhythmic way or whatever.
And someone will solo the...
Chordify it, yeah. Solo it and then put chords on it. And that stuff does teach you that it's like, well, yeah, we are all... This is singing, too. We're all doing some type... If you, like, slowed it down or listened to it 100 times, it would be a melody.
Yeah.
It wouldn't, you know, and you can figure out what key it's in. Like, Or you can place it in different keys based on the framing of the chords and stuff. So... It is important, I think, for people to, because I do realize a lot of beginners are like thinking, like they're really thinking hard about the words of it, and then they want to work on the music of it, and it's like you said, it's like, yeah, make it more, just sing like you speak, like in that case, just be more natural with it.
I think it helps me a lot to give up on rhyme.
Mm. Yeah.
And then like rhymes come, like sometimes I'm very rarely, unless I'm having to go hop into like a rap verse where I might plot out my rhyming couplets more in advance, or I have like, sometimes I'll have like one thing, like I really want to set that up and then I'll work towards it. But usually I'm just kind of throwing myself down the mountain and like.
It shows. I think that's.
It's delightful.
I think that's good. I think, same, it plays to the thing I said earlier where you can get out harder, not harder, but like you can get out your ideas more clearly if you let go of rhyming and it's much better to have a clear comic idea than a muddled comic idea that rhymes.
Yes.
Yeah.
1,000,000%. Yeah. I think that there's like, I've like been doing that math in my brain as to like, sometimes you watch musical improv and you see people plan rhymes and it's, you don't laugh. And then sometimes people force rhymes or like stumble on a rhyme and you laugh. Sometimes people stumble on a rhyme, you don't laugh. So there is this like magical, like, oh, what is it actually? And it's that clear comedic idea. If you notice that the person is on, as an audience member, they're on the same page as you, it doesn't matter whether they rhyme or not. When they do rhyme, it's like, oh, that's delightful. That really got me. But really you want to see them navigate it's like improv basic. It's like you want to see them navigate the relationship or the funny idea that they're doing.
Yeah.
So
should we get more nerdy and specific about the set?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do it. Well, let's 2020 it. We can start with, we'll do it like a sandwich, or no, not like a sandwich. We'll do it with the stuff we had trouble with first, and then we'll end with stuff that we enjoyed and felt connected to.
Yeah.
Can start.
Please.
I am still struggling with playing piano and accompanying at the same time.
Doesn't seem like it.
I cannot even fucking imagine.
But I will say I felt better at it this time than I did on my last set, which was my first time ever doing it.
Okay.
So it's improving. Like I can feel myself maybe getting better at it. Specifically the thing of starting to play music while still shaping game.
Yeah. Mm.
That's like the rub head pat belly.
Yes.
One that's particularly crazy. And then the other thing is not playing the same chords over and over, mm-hmm. like, because I'm thinking about other things, you know, you have to choose what to juice, and so it's like, oh, I could try to, my piano skills are being tested in their versatility, so I'm struggling with that sometimes.
I am amazed, like, when I watch you doing it just now, or, like, watching Greg Smith do it, I don't get it. It's so much information to not only like keep in your short-term memory, but to be using creatively and funnily, and it's very impressive.
Yeah.
And like one thing that I think someone watching the show might have noticed, and if you didn't, go back and watch it again, and then you'll see most of the choruses in these songs were being set by you.
Mm.
And like the fact that you were doing that work while also playing all the music is crazy.
Because choruses are often, I think, like that clarified game. I mean, it's not always that way, but it often is.
Yeah.
Or at least it's like, can we all unify on this idea? Because we're all going to try to sing it or sing aspects of it.
I think that was also a volley, though, because I was thinking about the music a lot right up top. And so I think it was natural also for y'all to sing up top, which in turn gave me time to think of a chorus. So it's a bit of a volley.
But
that's very kind.
I've been thinking about choruses a lot in general.
Yeah.
You set some very fun, good choruses. I don't know what happened to my brain. I just don't do choruses anymore.
Huh.
Yeah, I know that'll
pass.
I know that from your coaching.
Mary Lou and I just did a hour-long musical two-prov show. We didn't set a single chorus
interesting.
In an hour of musical improv.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's a good thing. Mm. It's just like not where our brains were going.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to speak for you.
Please
but
for me.
There was an aspect of in your coaching, I think. I think setting choruses and getting on the same page is like a really great fundamental to work on. And then you might get caught in certain songs where most of the song is the chorus. And if you're saying the same thing over and over again,
it's kind of boring.
It's kind of boring.
Yeah.
And so I think there was an aspect of like your coaching that was like, why not experiment at least with a little bit of like, you are allowed, if you have an evolution of the idea or an evolution of the chorus, you don't like think I have to pull back to this like first chorus that I set, or even like, I mean, because obviously musically the pianist is like, well, we're in the chorus, but they're not repeating it. But if you're comedically evolving the idea, then yeah, the music still has a chorus, but you're not necessarily doing like a singer-songwriter's chorus where it's like, okay, the same words.
In 2020 I can recognize that we would play through sometimes where a chorus would go and just be like, no, we're just going to keep singing ideas.
Yes.
And I liked that. I mean, I'm torn. My comedy mind loves the sensation of new information, and my musical mind and my primate brain loves going back to
I can sing along
the thing I know that I just heard before. And it's the balance of the desire for what's familiar and the surprise of what's new that makes this fun also.
Yeah. No, I'm not anti-chorus. Yeah. Like, that's, I was having a lot of fun having choruses.
Yes.
It's great to have, like, the whole reason it's a fundamental is a home base. It's like the one time in musical improv when you can really sing together and explore more complex harmonic ideas or rhythmic ideas together, because everyone knows what you're saying, so it doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
And you all know what you're saying. And that was fun, which I think is in large part because you were setting good choruses.
Oh, thank you. But I hear you. A tough chorus repeated four times in a song can be such a killer.
I think it's also easier with three people. Like, yes. I think what I... A lot of what I was trying to coach people out of was the... I hate watching eight people on a stage singing a mediocre chorus together because they have to, and then it's like so much momentum with eight people that it can't evolve or grow.
Yeah, it's real. Big teams are hard.
Yeah.
They're so hard.
There were a lot of songs in here where, like, the chorus we were singing by the end had morphed and changed in fun ways that felt natural and heightening, and that happens in real songs, too. Real musicals.
It does, yeah. But it is true. Like, getting it, like, noticing, like, being like, okay, it's been morphed, is, if you have to do that with eight people, it is.
It's hard.
It's very really hard. Difficult because.
And it's not a function of their inability to listen.
No, it's a function
of momentum, of a size of an object.
Absolutely. Right. Exactly. And the music is already there. And have we just rolled that momentum through to like everybody understanding it?
Yeah.
The relative, like, a lot of it's politeness, which is just this omni issue in improv. What's fun about this, three people, is someone starts a scene. And then the other two people know, but one of us is responding.
Yes. So there's not too much thinking either. Also, there's this crucial amount of non-thinking where you can't be too backline, where you start to think too much.
Yes.
Because you're sort of participating. It's fun to watch like a set when you're on the backline, but I think I do my best work when I watch as opposed to like plan, because that can be or. You know, you have an idea, you pocket it, and then you go, okay, now I just need to, like, watch this. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't keep imagining what's going to happen in the next scene, which is so much more likely in an eight-person set.
Were you doing that here? Were you imagining the next scenes?
No, I didn't have the time or energy.
I think I did one or two where I was like, oh, I want to see this person again, but no.
A closest example of that was like, I'd love to see that guy again, and we all clocked that and went like, oh, yeah, we'll do that. That's fun.
Yeah.
In a three-person scene, any half suggestion is almost always gonna like go.
Yes.
Whereas often in an eight person team, there can be a lot of like pitching past, I think, where it's like, should we do this? And because one person was like, I don't get it, or I don't, mostly often I don't get it, as opposed to I don't like it, it won't attach. And then you're stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that, like, a nerdy formal level of this narrative is the first song we sang, there was no clear protagonist established.
We were just chatting about this
off mic.
Yeah. And so you're the one who decided the show is going to follow Sally because you initiated the next scene following her.
I was so sure it was going to follow Viker.
Why'd you pick that?
I thought that she had a clearer empathetic trajectory.
She's more heroic in a way.
Yes, yeah.
And as more heroic, to anti-heroic.
Absolutely. And I do think that it was one of those things where it was like, okay, yeah, this is our clear protagonist. I had two lines of thought where I was like, okay, it's either about this, like, this girl, like, finding independence and, like adulthood in this new way after breaking up with her first boyfriend, or it's about a guy who finds a cavern full of lizard people.
Right.
And both of, I mean,
both were,
I think they
both
could
were
both
fun,
work.
Yeah.
I think if you go down the route of like, nope, he's right. Like, he's right about all this stuff, and there is a cabal of lizard people under the Hollywood Hills.
Yes.
You can do that.
You can.
But a lot of the times I'm thinking about, like, with music, I'm like, yeah, there is like the humor aspect, but then there is like the who can we emotionally really root for?
Yeah.
And in that moment, I'm like, it's her. It's her that we can like root for, like getting away from.
I really liked that choice.
Yeah. I did too. I
thought it was fun and it surprised me. But then once it was happening, I was like, oh, this is great. She has a lot to like about her.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was also surprised. But not that there's right or wrong choices in improv, because but whatever choice you made still could have been an amazing and fun show.
Yes.
But in retrospect, I'm glad you made that choice. I think it was the more fun choice, or the easier choice to have fun with, for the reasons you identified. Like, I think Bobby Rodriguez was this very shiny, high-gravity improv object of a character. But that, yeah, Sally Godspeed was definitely the more compelling character to follow through an arc.
Yeah.
And I liked that we got to see the shadow story, which was just...
Yeah.
Yeah, he was kind of the villain, I think. Yeah. But also...
And the AI compilation of information was our hero.
Yes.
Kind of.
The data center was...
I don't see him as a villain. He was the villain in the sense that he was like a negative part of her life.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was villainous. I think...
Yeah, he didn't do bad things. He just like was silly
until
he
got to the
negative ways.
Until he got to the border of Canada, and then we might have found out that he was wanted to shoot some guns.
Well, yes, right at the end, we blew him out to being...
Here's the thing about that song. That's my genuine... That's a real theory I have about why so much of what's happening is happening.
Yes.
That people watch The Walking Dead, and they realized how boring and banal capitalism is.
I loved that idea. I love, because actually, like, in a way, like, I feel that idea. Not the Walking Dead thing, but just the, like, I feel that, like, yeah, we're all, like, watching TV and, like, being like, oh, this is so exciting. And then our lives are, like, meh.
Yeah.
Like, or what, you know, like, whatever.
People create drama out of a desire to, like, enter a state of having meaningful struggle as opposed to non-meaningful struggle.
Yeah. We want to be living in a story. We don't want to be...
For no reason.
Is it okay if I see your passport now?
Yes, I thought that was a really fun.
Do you know The Walking Dead?
Yeah. Well, that's such a good example, I think, of like driving game. Like, you drove game so well, I felt like. It was like I could keep throwing things knowing that you were going to be like, yeah, and here it is, but also let's keep. That's so fun every time. Like, somebody who comes in with a really hot. Like, that was so bizarre to me. I was like, The Walking Dead? What the hell are we talking about? But I knew that if I just kept responding semi-groundedly, it would work.
Yeah, it's great when you know that, like, when you know that you can do everything in your power to derail, and it won't.
Yes.
Because that becomes, a meta game in and of itself of, like, knowing, like, okay, Sarah's not going to get derailed.
Yes.
Sarah's going to keep going. Yes. And no matter what I do, she's going to keep going.
Those really strong POV games are the easiest ones to play for that reason, because you can throw that character into any situation and it doesn't matter what it is. Like, if that's what he wants to talk about in that moment, he's going to talk about it.
Yes. I often encourage students when coaching, if they're feeling a little bit like they don't know how to generate game, or they're just like playing politely, is just like, what do you think? Like, or like, give me just like a really hot take. Like, kind of playing a little bit more, like, I think for you, sometimes that comes out, like, in a political lens, because you're a very political person. But each person's going to have their, like, unique spikiness.
Yeah.
And, like, that spikiness is the good stuff. It's, like, the comic point of view.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Like, it's not like I had that game in the tank, or it was, like, because you brought us from fucking the dude in the Mojave Desert. Boom, we're at the border in Canada.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that took me a second to be like, okay, yeah, I guess he left it. Like, it was an open question for me. Like, does he just stay in the desert with that guy? Like, and so I didn't have anything planned for that moment. And so that was 100% just like, great. Well, instead of trying to process this and come up with something funny about Border Patrol, and like, I'm just turning back onto, in my purely, like, this is just, that's not even like the Walking Dead theory, is my purely idiosyncratic theory. No one else says that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just an association I have with a guy like this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when I just went, like, opened my little cabinet door in my head, and I was like, what's something a guy like this thinks?
Yeah.
That's what was there in my brain.
Yes.
And so just saying, great.
I think that's really, yeah, a smart way to metacognate about what's going on. It's just like, if you don't have something, just kind of like, open the cabinet of your mind and go, what does someone like this think of this situation? Mm-hmm. In with a funniness,
yeah.
quote, like, you don't want to bring in something to bear that is like deeply unfunny or like overly sad, macabre, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you find, something fun.
Yeah. But what makes a game like that so easy to play? Anyone who's looking, do this, use it, steal it for your improv. I do it all the time. Anybody who just believes something weird to be talking about in a moment that is otherwise normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the belief that was waiting for me in my brain for a character like this. But it could have been anything, because the comedy has nothing to do with The Walking Dead.
Yes.
But, like, it could have been, like... You know, I just didn't really care for the DuckTales remake.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that will finally...
I'm looking for my passport. Okay. I'll get you my passport. I just don't really understand why they needed to make it. You know what I mean?
Because then, you know, the metagame or the larger game is just, I am not participating correctly in the routine and ritual of passport control or border control.
Yeah.
And the comedy is in watching you as the voice of reason. And it's true in both versions of that scene. Like, it's the comedy in that scene was watching you as a polite Canadian border guard really just trying to do your job.
Yes.
Yeah.
and like not know how to deal with it.
Yes.
Yes.
Because again, we're like, we're empathizing more on that side.
Yeah.
With you.
Did you get to say what you were happy about?
Yeah, what are you happy about, Richie?
What I was happy about? In regards to
the set.
Oh. I just like adding little things. I think it's
fun to be a corner gremlin.
Yeah. I got to be a little corner gremlin, and yeah, there were moments like that where it was like, okay, I wanted to hop in as another border agent to just play another voice of reason there to be like, oh yeah, well, nope.
Yeah.
this is insane. What's going on here? But also like doing that, I like doing that musically. So when I felt like it was like working musically where it's like, okay, I'm just going to like insert, supportive elements. But I really truthfully just enjoyed watching both of you navigate like barreling through ideas with like great skill and just enough. No, but it was great. It was fun to be a little like audience member and in this and be like, ooh, okay, well,
underestimating how much you were participating.
Yeah, I was participating, but I will say like you both have such magnificent like it's at this point not instincts, right? It's like, I mean, I guess it is instincts, but it's like clear, like you just go and it's great.
Oh,
it's awesome.
Very
fun. It was as fun to watch as it was to get to participate.
That's
so
very sweet, Richie. We're 2020ing, which means somebody may benefit from the look back going, where could we have turned left, where we might have turned right, or I don't think any specific choice is ever wrong in improv, just to headline that. But, you know, sometimes I forced a rhyme. You forced a rhyme?
And I was so sad about it. I said the president had a berry tree.
Oh.
I just
it didn't make
immediately
any sense.
Interpreted it as Bush.
I thought it was Bush.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Hopefully the audience also does that, because that, to me, I was like, okay, well, that maybe
well, then,
it's
but then
a
you
sex
brought it up
thing?
In the dialogue, right?
I brought it.
Yeah.
And both of you went,
I didn't understand it because I probably missed it in the singing.
Yeah.
And so, because
it was me going, it did make sense.
I doubled down.
Yeah. 30 minutes later.
As you should.
30 minutes later.
I love that.
Look,
one
you're not doing improv
like,
for yourself.
I heard that.
You're not doing good improv.
Yeah, that's true. So
that's
real.
True. But that's ever my, I think where I'm at, and again, you know this because of the coaching, where like, I think I started with heavy musical theater instincts and was very happy to just like sing songs from a comedic perspective or from a character perspective. And then I started wanting to work on rhyme brain and like wordplay brain. And so now I get to this point where if I force something like that, I'm like, I go, damn you, Richie. Like, you could have just not rhymed in that moment.
I
you
see.
Could have just done
your idea,
the idea, and you mm-hmm. don't have to feel that way. So that is like, that's my one thing of being like, yep, yeah, I don't. There's,
hey.
Every time I don't do it, I feel great about it.
I love that.
And then if I force something and it's just like, yeah, you just were obsessed with making a rhyme at that moment. It's like, ah.
I feel you though. I struggle with not doing a rhyme as well. It feels puts a grit in my teeth
mm-hmm.
to not rhyme. But
there was a verse in the Stanford song where the game is literally the rhyming.
Yes.
We're doing. Where
that was very
I funny. Was trying desperately to buy myself time to find a rhyme to end the verse with, and I just couldn't, and I just had to eat it, you know?
Yeah. But I always feel like, I mean, I don't think anyone would have listened to that and gone, oh, they ate it. Because it's all just like execution dependent, right? Like if you just land it, then it's like, it's fine.
There were a few in there where it was like, some of that was great wordplay, and then some of it was confident. Just you said a word and you said Ford at
yes,
the end.
Yes.
It was just as funny as the good word play.
Yes.
And that's,
I think,
like a great lesson to be like, you just said, you just started singing Ford.
Keep
really
playing
great.
Your game, even if bad, quote unquote, badly.
Yeah.
It's better than not playing your game because you're trying to play it perfect.
Yes. Yeah. And you'll dig something, you know, you'll get a little lull, but then you'll get something back.
That's so true. Yeah. You have to like fight through the lull.
As long as you are having fun and you like, understand that the stakes are so low.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's such an important thing that people struggle with, that the an improv audience, for the most part, is scared for you.
Yes.
And they, you got to think about it like how you would feel watching a tightrope walker.
Yeah.
And if a tightrope walker, like, wobbles or there's a breeze, and the tightrope walker looks visibly scared or they freak out, all of a sudden you're like, I'm not having fun because I'm worried you're going to fall and die.
Exactly, yeah.
But if the breeze comes and the tightrope walker is wobbling but he's laughing about it, then you're like, okay, fine, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, now like, I'm having fun in the imagined precariousness.
Yeah.
Like a horror movie. You don't want them to come out and actually kill you.
Right.
Yeah.
It's that...
The idea of social embarrassment is just so devastating for so many people that they watch us only experiencing dread.
It's yeah. It's that.
You're so right. I think that's so often this. Yeah. God, that contextualizes so many things people have said to me after shows where it's just like, oh my God. The first thing they say, I could never do that.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And it's like, oh, you're just like expressing your dread.
Yeah. So, like, our number one job as an improviser is not to do the thing well or to nail it, but to let the audience know that when we fuck up, we're fine.
We're fine.
Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah.
We've
actually done the processing to be okay.
Yeah, we're okay. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. When I did Dramatique, my brother-in-law was watching the live stream, and he's never seen me do improv, like normal improv or musical improv. And my sister said that he was like having a conniption on the couch while watching it, being like, what's he supposed to do?
Because that's for folks that might not know, that's Sarah's show where you sing the whole time.
Yeah, hour-long rock opera.
Sung through narrative whatever.
Yes, like Phantom.
Like Phantom or Les Mis. Yeah. I think a lot of my... You were saying earlier about the phrasing and probably the fact that I don't do choruses is that most of my opportunities to perform musical improv over the last 2 years have been that show.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where... You're talk singing.
We're talk singing the whole time, and setting a chorus is almost impossible.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's informed your play in such a fun way. I don't think it's been to any detriment.
Yeah, I'm happy with my style of play. I just like you were saying, there's the two arms of musical improv, and there's the third arm, which is like, so there's like the exploration and fun. There's the sitting in a moment and digging deep into it, which I would separate out from the third arm, which is there's like digging deep into the emotional content or into the like narrative content, funny content.
Yeah.
And then there's the formal depth, like that arm right there. Yeah.
The formal depth, say more.
Yeah. So I'd say like if we're sitting in a moment of, I don't know, what's a moment from this show that just happened?
The moment when the kind of budding romance over the ship, the ship radio.
Yeah, the budding romance over the ship radio. So, like, we could have kept looking for things to dive into and looking for other funny stuff to do. And it could have been like,
I don't know how spaceships work. Am I supposed to push the big red button? Yeah. And like adding shit. But that's not fun. We were both having fun digging deeper into like clarifying and shoveling more onto the pile of like, yeah, this awkward developing romance between, you know, two nerds
mm-hmm.
that just happens to be over the radio with mm-hmm. these stakes.
Yes.
And there's what I feel still very comfortable at, like better at than I, where I'm at, stronger than I have for most of my musical improv career, is digging into the emotionality of that and like the, what does this make me think of? What movie am I in right now?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the structure of it, like the thought of having, what would the chorus be? Like, what will this formally look like? Which is equally important, but I think that's like, those are the muscles that have been atrophying for me.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's like, it's the writer writing the whole piece in the brain, where it's like, it's the same muscle that makes you decide which characters to choose to go to next.
Sure. Yeah.
Or how far ahead to skip in time.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like thematic choices too, of like, you know, I think when we framed it back to like, oh, this language learning model, they orchestrated the whole thing, which is a conspiracy. That's mm-hmm. like a move
yes.
that isn't, it's a kind of a framing move, but it's sort of also like
a motif or something.
A motif or connection or, yeah. But I know what you're saying about like formal, like making decisions about like, oh, if we move 1 degree this direction, we can have a chorus that covers this stays focused on this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's something you're very good at. I also think of like Greg Smith as being very good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's what Zach and Jess are both incredibly, probably the best at, is just always having some part of their brain is thinking about the musical and not just thinking about the scene. Like, if y'all go back and look at the show, most of the good, solid directorial choices of like, what's the next scene? Where are we moving forward? Philip was making while also playing piano and singing.
Yeah.
And we got to just be over here and react for the most part.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's like improv's the eternal struggle of being fully in the moment and like listening better than you ever have. But then also realizing you are part of a broader show. And like, those are really hard muscles to have acting simultaneously.
Yeah. And so, add the narrative on top of it.
Yeah,
and it's like
that being
it's
part of it. Like,
long form in and of itself, you can think of like, okay, it's like the comedic ideas that are the themes. But then when you get into narrative and it's either themes or plot narrative, which you don't usually try to think of at all doing other types of improv, all of a sudden it's like, no, it actually kind of does matter. If it's done well, it's so satisfying for an audience to be like, that show had a theme, or that show had a plot where everything resolved in the same way that like the TV shows I watch or a musical that I watch does. That's a whole other level.
That's so true. It's like like those first two muscles are about raising the floor
mm-hmm.
of making mistakes, and then these other ones you're talking about are more about like raising the ceiling, like how far can you go, how great can it be, how satisfying can it feel.
Exactly.
I don't want to run too long, and I know you're checking your phone.
It? Yeah.
It's 4:51.
Oh,
what
okay.
time do you got to leave us?
We gotta get you going.
Where are you going?
Let's finish
you're
out.
I gotta teach. I gotta teach.
You gotta teach?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, great. Well, if you gotta go, let's finish out just with something you're really loving about musical improv right now, in a brief way.
Mm. I'm gonna say it based on this set is. When somebody commits both comedically and musically, it is just so delightful to be a part of. Like seeing somebody barrel down the hill in the way that both of you did, where it's like, wow, this is so, so exciting.
Mm. What about you, Sarah?
I'll double that. And I think I'll use it as a little mini opportunity because I'm leaving town and I don't know the next part of time I'll be a part of this little musical improv scene.
Yeah.
What I really enjoy is
the freedom I've been able to find and like letting go of a lot of the skills I worked really hard to develop in my first years.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just like letting myself play with a spirit of exploration and what if, knowing it'll be fucked up sometimes. And I think that's what keeps it alive for me and changing. And example from this show, like I was like, all right, I'm gonna do like a weird fast song. So the, I don't remember exactly what it was. I think the AI talking to Sally. It was like,
yes, it was like faster, yeah, patter. Yeah.
Where I'm just gonna kind of throw myself down into the song like this, and yes, I'm not gonna really worry about the yeah, phrasing, and yeah, I'm gonna maybe it, see where it goes and kind of match it up sometimes with the song when it hits. And then I really loved when I watched you make that decision, like, well, I'm gonna fucking do that. But like, that's, I don't know, just I think that's the whole beauty of this art form, is it's not real, the stakes are very low, and so if we're not having fun and pushing ourselves and like just doing our weird shit, why are we doing it? Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm gonna promise you, whoever's watching this, getting onto that Sing Out Louise team is not going to change your life.
What?
No, right? It's not going to be your make or break thing.
No.
So,
what?
Like,
it really won't.
Don't worry about doing any of this shit right. The whole point is to have fun.
What?
Yeah. I couldn't end on anything better than that. So let's end it there. Thank you both so much for being on the pod
thank
and this
you,
talk back. And you guys are the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
you,
Philip.
Bye.
For playing. Bye. Playing and playing. Playing squared.
But
what are they doing? Oh, wait, sorry.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
There we go. Yeah. And I'm every
bye,
time I see it, I'm like,
let's say it's, all right, goodbye.